So Texas just lost their backup kicker and all hope is lost, but we hope you pretend we're football for the next hour. I'm your host, Will Pazer, and I'm joined alongside by Johnny Brashear and Tim Preston, as always. You guys listen to the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on iTunes, Spotify, Podbean, and anywhere else you can find a podcast. Today we're talking about the multiple personality disorder-ridden team called the Texas Longhorns basketball squad, as they lose to TCU and UGA but turn around and beat Kansas at home, and then talk about, okay, which team is showing up at Iowa State and Ames.
I do feel like Texas basketball is the M. Night Shyamalan film of college athletics.
Yeah.
Ooh, what a twist. Oh, God.
But before we do all that, let's go ahead and start off with pretend you're getting to know us. And this pretend we're getting to know us this week is, what would be on the pretend we're football bingo card? Who wants to start off here? We're going to make this is going to be different. And also, everybody playing at home, if we miss something, please let us know in whatever comment section you're listening to or whatever. So this is going to be more free-flowing. This is not going to be so much it's your turn. But as soon as I say that, who wants to start off?
All right, I think I have the center of the bingo card. Okay.
That's the big question. Like, what's the center circle? Is the center circle like Johnny not saying hook 'em?
I was going to say that, but okay, Johnny, what do you think?
Well, I was going to say, and this hasn't been used as much this year, but Tim gets frustrated.
Yeah, okay. It hasn't been a thing at all this year. We haven't done it at all.
No, it happened once. It's happened once, I think it was on our first show at the very end, was a frustrating story from Tim.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think the free space goes to, does Johnny say hook 'em? Or Johnny doesn't say hook 'em.
Yeah, that's probably fair, yeah.
Because that just, you know, it's almost a foregone conclusion that it will never happen. But yeah. I think a frustrating story from Tim would be obviously on the card somewhere. Or at least if we're playing like a Loteria sort of style game where it's actually like bingo.
Mm-hmm.
Tim, you're up in Iowa. You have no idea what I'm talking about. But
eventually Hispanic people will make it there and you'll learn about this.
Never!
I don't know, man. I don't know, man. It might be a little too cold up there for rational people.
It is quite cold.
Here's the one I was thinking is a Carmen Sandiego beatbox from Tim. What do y'all think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I guess we just put the waveform on the bingo card. Like, I'm not sure how to do that, but yeah, that'll work.
Okay, G. Tim hums Carmen Sandiego. That's G. Tim hums
Carmen Sandiego. That has to be an acronym. That has to be an acronym just to fit on there. Okay, one I have is that I digress three times within a single question.
I like that. I like that.
That was.
I had some Johnny sarcasm in there.
Yeah, that might be another center.
How many center circles do we need? Center square. Yeah. Or the proverbial Johnny, like, all right, we're done here. Good. All right, this is finished. Everything's done. That's got to be there somewhere.
Standby. That's for sure. And on that note, we're done. All right. I had another one that was Will talks up his early athletic success. Like middle school stuff, grade school stuff. Yeah, that's on there somewhere.
You got to check off on that one last show. Yeah. But and going off of that, here, how about an awkward transition?
Yeah, no, that's – there we go.
Or another one would be a good transition and we all celebrate afterwards.
Yeah,
that's true.
The celebration is necessary. If I have a good transition and nobody celebrates, you don't get that space.
Okay. All right. Another one I had was that Tim breaks out a guitar for no discernible reason.
Oh, okay.
Look, it's been a while. That square is going to go unutilized.
Well, then otherwise people are just going to hit bingo super fast. You got to throw something in there somewhere.
I guess.
How about Tim gets up and gets a drink?
Oh, yeah, there's another one. That one's almost already marked. I had one that was Will gets amped up talking about a sport that has nothing to do with Texas. Like, you know, the Blues or the Cardinals or...
Or the Rams.
Yeah.
God.
Yeah.
Stan Kroenke, this is going to sound harsh, but this is how I feel. Stan Kroenke could die of testicular cancer and the world would be a better place. I'm going to go on record and say that.
I think he's over 35.
Check that box off.
Well, who was the... Who was the kind of like the crotchety old bitch who was the Rams owner? Like, you were certain that she smokes like three packs a day?
Georgia Fontaine?
No, that doesn't sound right.
I got another one. Tim makes a random reference that I don't get.
Yeah, or it could just be either Tim or I make a reference that Will is not old enough for.
No, no, no. Specifically Tim. Tim will, like, in the middle of us talking or the very end of something, he'll make some reference that is just out of left field, and either it will take me, like, a few minutes or a re-listen to really get it, or most of the time I'll just be like, all right, Tim's saying some random shit, but other people will understand it.
I hope so. If I don't bring that, I got nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Tim, do you have a space for us? But mainly the Johnny and Will show right now.
No, it's good. Like, I feel like this could get kind of petty and mean, so I'm just going to smile as you guys bring nice things to the table. So I really enjoy being on this podcast with you guys. You mean a lot to me.
How about this one? Johnny makes the "Where in the world is Timothy Preston" joke overtly sexual.
Yeah, that's a fair one. All right.
Or Grindr. Grindr is said somewhere in the show.
Yeah, that's... Yeah.
Check that box off, y'all.
Yeah, I have to go talk to my friends again and find out what the new thing is, because Grindr is apparently not it anymore, so...
I guess some kind of Iowa joke would probably be there somewhere.
Okay. Iowa jokes, yeah.
Iowa joke at the expense of Tim.
Yeah.
Good thing you're not frozen over there in Iowa. Over,
it's so fucking cold. So this morning, of course, I have all mornings... We wake up and our furnace is blowing out cold air. Like, oh my gosh, it's like 56 degrees in our house. So I have to go outside and clean out the intake valve for our furnace. Well, like, I had to like really dig deep in there, and dumbass me, like, okay, I'll just take my glove off for a second so I can get in there with my finger. I touched some ice, and I shit you not, within 5 seconds, I could not feel, like, I couldn't bend or feel the top of my fingers. Like, 5 seconds. I was so scared. So scared.
Tim.
I really thought that was going to be a frustrating story.
No, that's legit. Yeah. I was legitimately scared. So scared.
I was like, he's really setting this one up nicely.
I was expecting a frustrating story. I had my bingo card out. I was ready to mark that one down. B, frustrating story.
Well, the problem...
G, Tim gets up to go get a drink.
Tim starts slewing his speech.
So if Tim goes up to get a drink and he's out of alcohol, do you get to mark off two squares at once?
That's my secret, Cap. Yeah. I'm never out of alcohol.
All
right. here's another one. I ask about Shaka Smart's job security.
Like, some of the stuff that I would say, like, is so personal. Like, Tim suppresses urge to just scream at Texas fans because they blow. Or
that's Johnny's the free space right there.
Yeah, Johnny's hatred for, you know, anything. Whatever. Yeah.
No, wait. Finish that sentence. I want to hear the rest of
it. No, It's fine. We're venturing into new places that I'm not very comfortable
with. This happened off the show, before we started recording, but Johnny's girlfriend came to the show, and for the first time, she looked at us, and I don't think she's ever seen Tim, and she's never seen me, and we were like, what do you think? And what did she say, Johnny?
Okay, just so we're clear. I did not ask. I didn't ask. I just was there. I did, you know, I don't really need to know people's opinions of me.
So she described Tim as, or she said I described Tim as salt of the earth. She still swears I said that to this day.
She said,
Johnny, they look about it like you described them. We were like, how did you describe us?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. She did say Tim looked like about how she expected. I don't know if she realized Will was as young as he is. I know I've mentioned it, but
no. What did she say, Johnny?
What did she say?
I was salt of the earth.
Right. I remember
Will
that
part.
Will, do you remember? Is that because I don't remember.
I was like an asshole or something.
It wasn't that overt. It wasn't that overt, but it was certainly like on the DL. This guy's a douche. something of that nature.
I was like, Johnny. What do you tell your girlfriend about me? Like,
Look, in their monogamous, clearly atheistic relationship, Johnny and his girlfriend You just have to kind of like allow that to be it. Like that's going to have its own ecosystem, and you love Johnny for who he is.
I thought this wasn't getting petty and personal, Tim.
How is that
petty and personal? Let's put that on the bingo card.
I talked about altruistic love for you as a human being because of who you are. How that's not, well, I guess that's personal.
It's so really, there are two more that I would add to the card. It would be the show has a very happy theme or a very angry theme. Those are the two. Hey, yeah. Guess what? If you're playing along, you'll be able to mark those two off today. As let's start off with talking about TCU and UGA, y'all.
Hey, are we supposed to celebrate
great
that?
Great segue.
Like we're supposed to, yeah, there we
tremendous
go.
Tremendous right, segue. Yeah.
Mark off another one right
one
there.
One of the best. Bingo!
So the two games, or the three games we're going to talk about, there's basically two themes. And it's been that way pretty much all year long. It's the TCU and UGA. All right, Texas, what the fuck? You just have to ask that after going into TCU, another game which is just so close. You did everything right, but the last few possessions are messed up. And then UGA, which is they're not a good team. And Texas goes in there and just plays sloppy defense and gets beat by 10 points. What is going on there? These teams aren't just getting lucky. There has to be something. Is it the defense? Is it the offense? It has to be the defense, though, right?
All right. Well, I thought it might be a while before I had a chance to say this. But so we talked about it off the air a little bit over the last couple of weeks. But I really think that there's been an extent to which I have felt like, well, and on the podcast too, sorry. But there's been an extent to which I've talked about like these fluky losses, right? Like, oh, fluke. Like, oh, Matt Mooney, oh, Lindy Waters, oh, Uga now. And like that shit doesn't happen. But what has really stuck out to me of late, and I've had to kind of wrap my brain around it, is that we've just found ways to lose. You know, like you talk about some of the best teams around, how they're so gritty, they'll find a way to win. Well, we've kind of been the opposite. And against TCU, it did feel like, you know, we just, TCU kind of seemed ripe for the picking from us. It yep. felt like, you know, if we could execute down the stretch, if we could limit some turnovers, if we got some, you know, even just average shooting, or whatever. And we didn't get it. And then against Georgia, like, it kind of was back to that fluke stuff. But what seems to be the common denominator is us, right? Like, that stuff's not happening to other teams, but it is happening to Texas.
The show specifically, Pretender Football? I mean, well, Pretender Football's been going on. We have not been good, so
that's
it
true.
Should be.
Yes, the three of us are the common denominator of us being bad. But if you're looking for some specifics about TCU, I did not like our offensive movement. That's one of the first games this year I really felt like our offensive movement was bad. It felt like we seemed to want to attack TCU in that game simply with spacing. Like, oh, okay. And maybe they thought our ball handlers were good enough to say, all right, well, if we can attack them and we, you know, have decent court spacing, that we'll be okay. But it felt like over and over in that game, they defended us well on the initial ball screen, and then we had no answer. Against Georgia, obviously, offensively, we were very good, or at least, you know, other than the turnovers, quite good. And defense was the problem. Defense was the problem there. But
other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play?
Yeah, I need to see this play. I can see have another hole in the head. But
it wasn't just that. I mean, Georgia shot 70% from three. That had to be the biggest problem there was fact that they shot 70%.
And
so
they,
most of their possessions were
from volume,
efficient.
Too. Like, it wasn't just 70%, like, okay, they shot, you know, 7 for 10 or 5 for 8 or whatever it be. Like, they shot a number of 3. Anyways, it's hard to kind of put your finger, because they're two so different games. Like, to lump them together is kind of strange because of just how slow and methodical the TCU game was and how up and down the Georgia game was, and yet Georgia has kept on, like, for a team that struggles in execution like they they do. Like, they, on the one hand, they were terrible in execution. On the other hand, like, they shot lights out. It was just, it's a very weird stretch. But that is Texas, right? That is exactly Texas. We found ways to lose slow, methodical games that are close. We've now found a way to lose against a bad team who, like, is going apeshit from shooting. It's just, it's maddening to wrap your brain around.
So I was talking to a writer friend of mine who wishes to remain anonymous for this quote that I have told him I was going to steal. We were talking after the Georgia game, sort of big picture about Shaka. And one of the things he said is that he actually can't explain Shaka except to say there's bad luck involved there. But at some point when somebody keeps getting shit on by birds, you have to be like, this dude consistently is shit on by birds. It just keeps happening, and I think it's going to keep happening, even though I don't know why. And that felt pretty prescient, personally. It's, you know, Georgia shooting 70% from three, even in volume, is him getting shit on by bird. Because that's just, I mean, that's not replicable. Like, they did to us what Texas did to Kansas State, except worse.
Yeah.
And I mean, you've seen that has not been replicated by Texas yet again this year, you know, and it's different breakdowns, right? Like, some of it is absolutely Texas's fault. Like, Matt Coleman putting in a terrible performance against Georgia is absolutely part of the Texas's fault. You know, the lack of grabbing defensive rebounds in the TCU game and the Oklahoma State game, for example, are absolutely Texas's fault. Like, there are controllable factors here, but at the same time, there's also who was it? Graham that went for, or no, it wasn't Graham in Kansas, who hit three of his first four.
Garrett. Did you see his 3-point shot?
Yeah.
The 3-point shot in Austin that he took.
Yeah,
it looked like a launch. Like, it's like, just take the ball. He missed by. Yeah, it was a terrible. Like that dude hit 3 feet against us.
Yeah, so there is some flukiness that just keeps happening over and over again. And at a certain point, you're like, is it possible that, like, I don't know, Shaka ran over the Pope's grandmother at some point, or he seems so snake bitten in so many of these close games, because, you know, that's another part of this that's so frustrating, is that as crazy as Georgia shot in that game, they still won that game by 11, and it was within single digits for a while. And if Texas capitalizes on even three more of those 26 or whatever turnovers, this game is completely different. You look at the TCU game, and if they snag a few more defensive rebounds instead of giving offensive chances, this game is completely different. The play at the end of the Kansas game in fog goes a little differently. You know, like, there's some other universe here where this team is currently like 15-4 or something, because all of the things that bounced the wrong way in this universe bounce the right way in the other. And it's infuriating, because you can see how close and yet how far away that is. And it's just, I mean, it's infuriating. When I did the Kansas recap, I started it by saying, this fucking team, man, because I have said that sentence in some completely unique inflection and volume level and anger or satisfaction level at every single game this year, because either I am cursing how close they were, cursing them fucking something up, or exalting over a win, or, you know, like, they just, it's a fucking roller coaster, and I don't know how to stop it.
Texas basketball is like a box of chocolates.
It is.
You never know what you're going to get.
It is. And a couple things that we needed to kind of dispel, because this is different than it's been for Texas for a while. So Texas actually does have some senior leaders right now in Osikowski and Roach. And that is different than it's been for the last couple of years for the Longhorns. But this is not a veteran team, right? This team is littered with sophomores and freshmen who are playing big minutes and being counted on to provide a lot of well, production. But I think when you consider what this team has struggled with over the year, it's not just been a question of, well, hey, you know, we're young, we can't kind of get our shit together just yet, but there's also a semblance of, this shit shouldn't be so hard, and we're making it hard. And we don't seem to, even when things go right, we're not taking those things that have gone right and parlaying that into the next game. We're reverting back to, okay, well, even though we know that this shot, this particular shot that we're taking, is not going to give us a lot of efficiency or a lot of success, and we're taking it anyways. And so when you lose two games like Texas lost those first two last week, you know, there's frustration, there's those what the fuck moments, there's, you know, like, oh, there's another opportunity missed. But it's also a question with Shaka of like, okay, so if there, you know, if we are looking for some way to kind of quantify why does this keep happening to us, I do think you have to kind of at least think about the nature of his ball screen offense. And if I was a coach coaching against Texas, and all I would have to say is like, okay, we need to be close or maybe a little bit in front with 6 minutes to go, and we're going to win. Like, as long as we're within that, you know, that time frame of, okay, if we're in the game with 6 minutes to go, we're probably going to take them down. Because they can't execute. And when we have gotten to some of those tougher games, particularly on the road, it seems like over and over again, we fall into that same track of we can't execute. We can't get stops down the stretch. And against TCU, we didn't. And against Georgia, we didn't. Because I want to say we were within four pretty late against Georgia. And then it was back up to double digits because of, you know, shitty shot selection and bad turnovers. And there it is.
I'm going to slightly disagree with you on that, in that we have seniors. I don't think we have senior leadership.
No, exactly. I completely agree.
I think part of why I have been kind of quietly nodding to next year is that I am intensely interested in seeing this team being led by Courtney Ramey, Matt Coleman, and maybe one or two other guys who are the dominant voices in the room.
You should put their years before that to make it sound even more enticing.
Oh, what, junior Matt Coleman, sophomore Courtney Ramey, and one or two other guys.
Junior Jace Fabris.
Yeah, maybe. I feel like it is a difficult task to lead a team when you have a hard time leading yourself. And when you look at the delta between the way Osakowski practices and how he performs in games, more often than not, particularly in shooting, it's, you know, it's one thing if Isaiah Taylor goes out there, plays ISO ball, scores 18 points a game, and says, let's fucking go, guys. It's another thing when a guy like Osakowski goes out there, shoots 4 for 21 in conference play from three, misses bunnies regularly, and says, let's fucking go, guys. Or a guy like Snoop comes out there and says, goes out there, fucks up the last play against Kansas, has a terrible last play in the first half against Kansas at home, almost gives it away a couple times late in this Kansas game. There's the end of the Oklahoma State game, and he comes out and says, let's fucking go. Like, there's a difference in those sort of voices. And I would like to see this team with leadership from guys who regularly show out in games, because I think that is a secondary benefit in a program where a coach gives as much control to the players as Shaka tends to do. And so I'm not trying to shit on Osakowski and Snoop, because they each have positives they bring to the team. They each do valuable things in their way. But there are reasons why those guys are not necessarily the most authoritative voices you can imagine when it comes to a basketball locker room. And I feel like one of the tertiary reasons, like one of the small reasons why this team may not be hitting its apex, is that guys who take things off the table almost as much as they bring to the table are the ones that are being counted on to lead the team in crunch time, and that presents problems that there are not easy solutions for.
Yeah, I actually mean this in the worst way possible. So I don't know if it's going to sound as bad as I mean for it to sound. I think that both Dylan and Kerwin are freshman-like in their inconsistency.
Yeah.
Like, almost yeah. every freshman in the country. Like, it's very rare. Like, you will rarely get a freshman, you know, wherever they might be. And maybe they're a 3-star recruit, maybe they're a 5-star recruit, whatever it might be. You'll get freshmen occasionally who are very consistent. Almost every freshman in the country is going to have problems with that. But that's okay. Like, freshmen are supposed to have these flashes of greatness and, hey, we can do this, and we're not doing it all the time, but we can do it, until you give you a little glimpse of what we're going to be later on. But Dylan and Kerwin seem to be as plagued by that now as they were when they first set foot on campus. And that is horrifying. Like, it's just, that's the kind of thing that mediocre seasons are made of. Which I think you have to kind of classify the season as. Like, I had hopes, you know, if we, you know, turn back the clock to 2 months ago, I was talking about, well, we can be a 22 or 23 win team. Well, now, you know, I don't see us winning 20 that many games, you know, even if almost best case scenario happens. That inability to ascend beyond what generally is a pretty primary issue for first year players, as a fifth-year senior, as a fourth-year senior for Kerwin, is causing a lot of problems for us. Like, I'm not saying they're not good players. They are good players. I'm not saying they don't have talent. They certainly do. But if you're looking for, hey, in comparison to how good they could be, who is struggling the most, that lack of consistency from those two guys is pretty damning for us.
So let me go ahead and harken back to last show. Y'all said that if Texas lost to UGA, Texas would have problems. Is it still a big problem that they lost to UGA? If not, why? And also, why are you a liar?
Well, I teach language arts. So, like, that lying comes with the territory. Well, your sentence is fine, sweetie. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
I feel like embellishing. Like, why did he open the door? There has to be some sort of meeting. No, the artist just meant he opened the fucking door.
Yeah. Okay. So, yeah. So, yes, I'm a liar because Texas basketball makes me one. Like, if there's any entity in the world that could make me a liar at that scale, it's Texas basketball. Look, it's a terrible loss. It is. Like, there's no getting around it. Like, thank God it's on the road. Like, if we had lost to Georgia at home, like, then, you know, like, noose or bleach, Will. Bleach! Okay, make it fast. But, but when you consider some of how that game went, like, it does sort of fit into that narrative of, wow, what a fluke. Wow, they'll never do that again. Like, wow, they won't play Texas 31 times this year, so they won't shoot like that. But also, if you had asked us, if you had gone through the scenarios and say, okay, they lose at TCU, okay. They lose at Georgia, ugh. They win against Kansas, you know, like, so it matters in as much that, like, it's a bad loss, you know, drops us a line probably at least. If we make the tournament, but it also, like if you're looking for a way to absolve it, it's beating Kansas. So yes, it's not good. Yes, it makes me hate watching this fucking team. No, it's not as destructive as I thought it would be a week ago.
I think I would say I am not a liar, but I am an idiot. is that better?
Oh boy, I wish that was a bingo square.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe put Johnny's self-deprecating joke in there somewhere on the bingo card. Yeah, it's
right next to the Johnny sarcasm.
Right. Yeah. It's. You know, the thing is, I think so. Here's why. A week ago, me would say that was a problem because if they lose to Georgia, how the fuck are they going to be expected to beat Kansas? And how the fuck are they going to win more than two more games in conference play if they're losing to the likes of Georgia? Because Georgia is not a good team. Well, maybe we need to have a podcast every other day so that we can accurately track the momentum of this team. Because if you...
The graph of this team is just...
Yeah, it's just, it's one ending, like, I don't even want to call it a sine wave, because that has too long between troughs and valleys. Like, it's got to be, like, you know, like a really high wave.
The dot
like a,
chart. Like a, the yeah, dot chart.
Yeah, like 2.4 gigahertz or something.
There is no line between these dots. There is just
dot. Yeah, pretty much. Because, like, the consistent thing about this team is their maddening inconsistency. And... however you think they're about to play, they probably aren't. Because if you had talked to me before the TCU game, privately I would have said, I think they got a good shot at taking down TCU. I think they should beat Georgia. I think they'll lose to Kansas and they'll lose to Iowa State. Well, I'm 0-3. And the Iowa State game is TBD, and I hope, like, fuck's sake, I'm wrong about that one too. Because it's just... God damn it, this team. This fucking team.
Here's the thing is they have now given fans hope. So then Texas is going to go ahead and get that snuffed out by
Iowa State. Well, but
they had sufficiently destroyed all hope, which is why they beat Kansas. But now that they beat Kansas, there is some hope left in Texas fans. So they need to, in turn, get it absolutely snuffed out at Iowa State.
Yeah, but here's the thing. It seems like, and now, mind you, basing your idea of fan sentiment off of internet comments is a terrible idea in general because they always think everything sucks. People don't usually get on the internet to talk glowingly about something unless it's, I don't know, a new Netflix series. But other than that, when it comes to sports, they generally get on there to vent. So, you know, what I've noticed is less hope and more... like, the people who want to hope are too scarred by the rest of the season to really hope, so they're sort of like, I'm going to enjoy the shit out of this win, and then just kind of bundle up for the Iowa State game. And then the people who really are tired of Shaka are like, well, fucking shit, now he's going to stay another year, and they're pissed off. So, like, nobody's happy. Like, nobody's happy, but for entirely different reasons. I think it's infuriating. Why, like, I sent Tim a text before the Kansas game that I said that my level of dread coming into the Kansas game was bordering on existential because I was so down and I spent the whole game waiting for them to put the knife in. I knew it was going to happen. At some point, they're going to stick that fucking knife in, and it was just going to... Kansas was going to win another goddamn game.
That Vic was going to hit that 26-foot three-pointer or whatever. Like, oh, here it fucking comes. Yeah,
yeah, like, they went... when they went zone with LeGerald Vic on the court, I was like, fucking shit, here it comes. Like, this is it. but, you know, it's... to get back to your point, and mark off that bingo thing about the three digressions, because that's already happened.
Super fast. I answered that text 4 times and sent none of the answers. Like, I didn't know what to say. It's like, there's nothing that can quell his nerves.
There was no right answer to that. So, does the Georgia loss matter? The answer is kinda. It's now a footnote because of what happened at Kansas. Because when it comes to the end of the year, the Georgia game is going to be considered probably the worst loss. And I say that because I think the Radford game, I think Radford is going to win the Big South. And if they do win the Big South, it's going to be hard to quantify that as a bad loss when that team is also going to be in the tournament. It's not a good loss, but not as bad as, you know, the metrics might otherwise say. So if Georgia is the worst loss, Kansas might be the best win or second best win behind UNC or something like that.
Yeah, K-State. You know, yeah.
There's also Oklahoma State, and there's also VCU. But
sure, you know. Yeah, and there's others. But at the same time, like at the end of the time, at the end of the day, with the lack of really outstanding teams in this conference, and a whole host of teams who are going to be on the bubble with very flawed resumes, saying you beat Kansas is a big notch in front of those selection committees, and yeah. So. I feel like that slightly outweighs the terribleness of the Georgia loss.
So let's go ahead and break into Kansas then. And obviously it's the exact opposite of what TCU and UGA is. It's what the fuck? All right, Texas. Because Texas beat Kansas, as we all know. I mean, it's not, if you're listening to the show, you know. It's not like, oh, they did? Wow. Thanks for letting us know, pretend we're football. But Texas's first win versus Kansas since 2014, snapping a 10-game losing streak against them. And let's start off with having some fun, you know. What was your favorite part of the game?
Oh. So there was that section there at the very end, or towards the very end, like there's like 3 or 4 minutes left when Jace hit a couple of threes. And like Johnny, I was waiting for the other shoe to drop. Like, oh, here we go. We're going to lose it. Oh, Jace hit a three. All right. Back up to 7 points. You know, and then it was down to like 3 points or something like that. And then Jace hit another. He's like, let's fucking go. And that was kind of that like crucible point inside of the game where if you're waiting for Texas to lose and then Jace hits those threes, like, okay, this is going to be that kind of game. All right, good. So of the close games that we play, this is going to be the one that we do fine. Tremendous. Good job, Jace. So if you're watching Texas basketball this year and you're not, like, very perpetually on edge because of how bad, you know, they can play down the stretch, then you're on something stronger than the whiskey I'm drinking right now. But when he hit those threes, there was, like, the... I was glad he hit him, but I was also glad that like my blood pressure could go ahead and kind of get back to normal levels at that point.
My favorite moment was when the final buzzer rang because
yeah. When Jackson's holding the rebound in his hand and they're not going after him. Yeah, I
mean, so slightly less favorite moment was when Jackson and the other guy had the held ball that they just called a foul.
That was surreal.
Why are the refs always so bad against Kansas?
It was funny to watch that because like all 10 players stopped. They all expected a held ball, and the ref. It's like the ref in was it Semi-Pro when he saw the alley oop for the first time. He just blew his whistle and was like foul. I don't know. That's got to be a foul. Like that's he caught the ball without dribbling. That has to be a foul. Like it's. Yeah, so that was pretty good. Yeah, honestly, like I am so used to Kansas fucking Texas in the most painful way. At the very last moment, I expected LeGerald Vick to score 8 points in the last minute or something crazy. And like it didn't happen. Texas shot 91% from the free throw line and they snuffed it out. And like, you know, that's one of those things that you look at and go, okay, that's a nice progression. They're the number one free throw shooting team in the Big 12 during conference play. That's something. Final buzzer. That was my favorite moment. I think because then I could breathe.
Mine is a little bit more, I guess, what this answer was going for, what this question was going for, which is when Jackson Sims dunked over the Kansas player to really kind of put Texas. Like, say, okay, this is a Texas game. It was with, like, 1 minute left. Texas.
Oh, on the pass ahead by Coleman.
Texas up by, like, 9 points.
Oh,
it was,
yeah.
Like, yeah. 60. Oh, no, I guess it would have been 65 to 58 at that point. So it was kind of the run of Texas's, we're not letting this game get out from under us, sort of.
Yeah, that was a good one.
That was a badass catch, too, man.
It was. I mean, Jackson Hayes has had a ton of them, and that will definitely be on the highlight reel at the very end of the year. Because they're going to be pumping that to make sure that they get into the tournament, or at least try to. And y'all already talked about how this helps Texas's tourney chances. It kind of whiteouts the UGA loss. Like, hey, Texas lost to UGA by 10. No, no, no. Don't look up there. Look farther down at the next game where they beat Kansas by 10.
Right.
So that's what we have. But does it change your perception of this team all that much after that game?
No. No, it doesn't. Because you can't count on this team to be this way every single game. If they were, they would be battling for a protected seed. But that's not who they are. If they played this way every single game, for one, Tim would have less ulcers. He would also have less texts from me. It's, you know, we would have more listeners probably. It would be it's a win-win all around, I guess. It doesn't.
If we were 24-0,
right? Yeah. Well, yeah. Well. This is really disappointing. I didn't expect to be 22-2 at this point. I don't know what happened to those two losses.
Radford at home at Georgia.
Yeah, exactly. Georgia still goes for 71% from three, even though. This whole season has been making a case for, okay, what is their potential? Can they reach it? How do they reach it? At this point, I'm looking for them to build on something, because what seems to happen to this point is they go have some game where they play against high-level competition and they really show out and they win the game, and then it's like they spend the next 3 days reading newspaper clippings or something. They start to think that's who they are, and they don't practice and perform like that's who they are.
So that brings up the next part of this, is why does Texas continue to make this so complicated? Because we've seen that it's not that complicated. Where does the disconnect happen for Texas in y'all's opinion?
Yeah, that's the part that really just eats at me with this team. Is you look at that Kansas game and there's almost everything in that whole game is repeatable. Or even, like, you could even make the case that we can play better than what they play. Kerwin was 3 for 13, I want to say. I think Matt scored 2 points. Jace shot well from three. Courtney shot well from three. And so those were good. But really what was really strange about that is that, like we talked about earlier, Texas is like finding ways to lose. I feel like the Kansas game was the first time in a while that Texas really played extremely well defensively for most of the game. Like the last like 3 or 4 minutes was kind of crazy, but that was kind of desperation mode for Kansas and us hitting some threes. So there were a lot of points scored in that point. But when you think about what Shaka was going to bring to Texas, it was an offensive system not totally dissimilar from what Rick brought, but just this defensive intensity. We're going to make sure that we're getting deflections. We're going to rebound well. We're going to pressure you into mistakes. And they haven't been able to do that. And because that defensive integrity has been struggling, our offensive woes or some of those tougher mistakes that we've made, you know, when we've been in like one-on-one situations, have been accentuated. And so in a game like this, that's actually more damning to me, that we did almost nothing special against Kansas. We just simply were ourselves. Yeah, Dylan attacked well in the paint, but like he can kind of do that. Yeah, Courtney and Jay shot well from three, but they can kind of do that. Yeah, Kerwin hit some big shots from the outside, but you know, he's not incapable of that. And so from you know, an outside perspective, you know, and kind of, you know, as a coach of a different sport and a very different level, I understand how tough it can be to instill consistency into a team. But like, there's also some ways that you can instill that, but we haven't been able to do that kind of on either side of the floor this year. And that just just eats at you. Like, why can't we? This is what he's supposed to be good at. Why can't we? Like, we're always trying hard. We're always in the game. Like, I wouldn't say we've been blown out a single time this year. Yes. I mean, maybe the second half against Michigan State, but other than that, like every half, everything has been close. But there have been those little pieces that haven't allowed us to get, haven't allowed us to be the kind of team that we can be consistently.
I guess the issue that I've had is more, it's not that I feel like they have had defensive struggles or offensive struggles. It's that they have never had both sides of the ball clicking at the same time for extended periods. Like early in the season, they had offensive problems. They weren't hitting from three very well. They were, they're still trying to figure out their offense, but their defense was really rock solid. And then they get into conference play, the last edge of non-conference and then conference play, and their offense starts clicking and their defense starts going south. And I think to your point, it's that the Kansas game is the first time in a while I've seen both sides perform pretty well at the same time. And it's good to see that, but I need to see it for more than one game before I go, oh, okay, they got it.
Which I can agree with. And I think that to that point, I like how the minutes distribution has been. Like, I like that Eli is getting less minutes. Like, sorry, Eli, for listening to this. I apologize. Like, you seem like a good dude. But, I think he played 3 minutes against Kansas. Like, and that was the right play. And as much as I am excited about Kamakahepa's long-term future, I do think that you have to have Dylan on the floor. Like, he just brings so much to this team as a rebounder. And as a guy that can bring the ball down low, so from the standpoint of personnel decisions, rotations, what we're doing defensively, like I like Shaka's decision making, but it hasn't necessarily equated to better results. And so that's hard to quantify too. Like, why, if I like the decisions he's making, is it not helping us in the WL column?
So still the question remains, where is the disconnect?
I don't know. I mean, that's sort of the unknowable thing for me, because I'm not in the coaching meetings. I'm not at the practices. So I feel like I would kill to be a fly on the wall in the internal coaches meetings to hear them talk about why they're doing things the way they're doing it. Because, externally, pretty much all of it seems defensible to me at this point. I'd quibble about some things here and there, but generally, I think they make the right decision more often than not, and I would really like to understand the why of those decisions more, so that I can better understand. I would really like that context.
I would too, but okay. So it feels like there's gonna be one of two lines of thought, and I hate to make it this simplified. In my time at Inside Texas, it feels like a couple of different schools are what you're thinking. Either A, Shaka sucks and can't get it together, or B, he's put his faith in two seniors that are not capable of getting the job done. So if you look at everyone else on the Texas roster, I do think that there's kind of a semblance of, yeah, they're about where I thought they were. Maybe not Jericho. Like, we thought Jericho would be better, but, I guess you could maybe interchange him with Jackson. Like, as much as I've been disappointed with how Jericho has played, Jackson has totally picked up the slack for me. And if their numbers were inverted, that would have been like, okay, that's fine. But everyone else has kind of been the guy I thought they would be. And the consistency has been, pretty hit or miss, of course. But Kerwin and Dylan have not been the senior leaders that I thought they would be. So I guess I do a little bit fall on that side, Will, of that question. Like, okay, what's the disconnect? Well, for me, it's I think that our staff should be able to rely on a fifth-year and fourth-year senior who they've had this much time with 3 and 4 years to get the job done on a relatively consistent basis. And they have not been able to count on that. Now, are we a good enough staff to get over the hump regardless? Sometimes yes, sometimes no. But for me, I am more likely to say, man, it's frustrating that those two players haven't been able to do it. As much as I know they're still kids, they still have a lot to learn, they still can get a lot better as they become professionals, but there's a big disconnect for me with that.
Well, they're definitely going to have to get over the hump in this next game, because if they do, it would be huge. I don't even really need to ask you the question of how important a win would be against Iowa State in Ames coming up on the 2nd of February. But how important would describe to me what the scenario is if Texas wins and what the scenario is if Texas loses?
So to put in perspective sort of how I view this game, of the 10 remaining games in the regular season, this is the hardest game left on the schedule in my
unquestionably.
Eyes.
Unquestionably.
At Texas Tech will not be easy, but I still think this one is more difficult of the two, partly because of the atmosphere, partly because of the team. But nonetheless, I think this is the least likely win on the schedule, which probably means that Texas wins by 12 for some fucking reason. You know, the thing is, it's Iowa State plays defense and offense both very well. Like, it's not like Tech where they are very reliant on their defense and, like, a guy to score, or like Kansas State where they are very reliant on their defense, that sort of thing. If Texas wins this game, they are then looking at the possibility of really jumping up in the Big 12 standings, because they will be, well, they'd be 5-4 at that point. They're halfway through. They've got a 1-1 record against Kansas. They got a 1-0 record against Iowa State with the home game left.
1-0 against K-State.
Yeah, 1-0 against K-State. They're starting to build up tiebreaker advantages in a conference where there's a good chance that six or seven of the teams are going to be between 10 and 12 wins. So they have a really good shot at that point of making a upper half Big 12 finish. If they lose this game, that's sort of, for me, I mean, that's expected. Like, unless they get absolutely just run out of the gym, then that will be a disappointment. But, you know, at this point, I like the opportunity here, if only because there's not a lot of downside here. If they can pick up this win, that is definitely an unexpected victory. And it will, and on top of them beating Kansas in the previous game, shows that they have the consistency, at least for a couple games in a row, to play against the top of the Big 12.
That's exactly correct. This game only matters if we win. If we lose, even if we lose by like 18 or 20 points, like, it doesn't really matter, right? A lot of good teams are going to lose by a lot at Iowa State. So I don't think there's a whole lot of downside if Texas gets beat there. If they happen to win, it's gigantic. Now, I don't expect them to win. Texas has struggled against teams shooting better than their average this year, and Iowa State might be the best shooting team they'll play all year, particularly with Michigan State now losing Langford, right? So this is probably the best shooting team they'll play, and they play really fast, and we've struggled with teams that can, you know, have gotten out in transition or have gotten some offensive rebounds. So Iowa State is pretty complete, they're better than I thought they would be, and I thought they'd be pretty good in the first place. So this is a game where probably all Texas fans should just assume, hey, if we can play close, if we can get in there nice, if we happen to have a chance to stay one at the end, cool. But expecting a win, or even expecting a kind of like a close loss, is probably not going to happen.
So what do we watch for? How do we figure out which Texas team is going to be there? What are we going to be watching for to see, all right, we have the Kansas team here, or all right, we have the Georgia team here? What are the keys I need to look for in this game?
So, two things in my eyes. One is turnovers on both sides of the ball. Iowa State is, if not better than Texas at taking care of the ball on offense, they're at least as good. And I'm pretty sure they're a little better. They're also pretty good at forcing turnovers, especially in the sense of steals. So, if Texas is going to stay in this game, limiting turnovers is a big deal. The other thing is, I want to see if they can, through a combination of, I'm assuming, Jace and Kerwin, try to limit Mariel Shayok, because he is, while they have a lot of talent on that team and there are guys who can beat you in any given night, he is the most dangerous of the guys on that team, in my opinion. And I guess one other thing is, I would like to see if Iowa State goes to a four guard look, which they do sometimes, they go to at least a smaller look. I would like to see Texas reestablish what they did with Osakowski in the Kansas game, where he starts backing down smaller guys. If he could do that, if they can, you know, limit the other two factors, then they got a shot. But yeah, that's about it.
Okay. If Iowa State plays like ass, then we're gonna have a shot. For me, what I'll be looking for is how can we run the how can we kind of maneuver between the fact that we want to play fast on offense and make them play methodically on defense, or when we're on defense, right? So which can be tough, right? Because once the speed and tempo gets going in a game, it can be tough to like to stop that tempo or to change that on a dime. But we need for Iowa State to take some contested hard bounce jumpers. If we can do that, we can beat them. Like, if we can do that consistently, we can beat them. And we have the individual defenders to make them do that as long as we play well on defense. If they can shoot shots in rhythm, if they can get out in the open floor a lot, we're going to struggle because Iowa State wants to run, And Wigginton, as good as he is, he can also struggle when he gets in some of that hero ball stuff, because they actually have like four or five guys that could all like be go-to players, like with Shayok or Wigginton or who's the freshman from Wisconsin?
Horton Tucker.
He's good too. He wasn't the other guy.
Halliburton.
Guard. Yeah, Halliburton. Right. So they have like four guys who could all Wyler Babb, five guys that you could say can make plays out of nothing. So you know, but. In any given play, only one of those guys is going to have the ball in their hands. So if we can find ourselves in some plus situations where defensively we get them late into shot clocks, we get them into a situation where they have to kind of create off the dribble against our good length, against our good athleticism, then we're going to have some chances. And then on the flip side, when we can get moving on offense, we convert in the open floor. When we can get some clean shots from three, we're hitting those shots. So, like, it's a pretty fine line that we're going to have to toe to beat Iowa State there in Ames. We won there last year, which I want to say was the first win in Ames since, like, 09 or, like, 2010, something like that, I think. So that's pretty rare. But the chances there, we're just going to have to make sure that we dictate things and not allow them to be in charge of the tempo and how things go.
To end off the show here, I want y'all to describe to me two situations. How does Texas win this game, and how do they lose it?
They lose it by allowing the atmosphere at Hilton to kind of get the best of them. This and Kansas are the toughest. Those are the toughest places to play in the Big 12 because of the way that the crowd and the atmosphere kind of gets a hold of a game, right? And every good play for the home team at those arenas is magnified, and every you know tough or difficult play for the opposing team is again magnified. So they're going to have to control things from a standpoint of here's what we do well, and we're going to execute that. If that happens and we can actually kind of run our sets and get Iowa State maybe into foul trouble or have a lot of free throw opportunities like we did against Kansas, then we can win that game. If we don't do that shit perfectly, like if we attempt eight free throws against Iowa State, we can't win. If we don't play well in the open court, we can't win. If Iowa State has a decent shooting game, we can't win. So, like, there's a lot of scenarios where we don't win if we can be in charge of the tempo and be in charge of, like, playing really well on offense on the move. Then, you know, we'll have a shot, I guess.
So I have four words that can describe the situation in which Texas wins this game. And it is Steve Pro Molestation Felony. Like, Steve Prohm gets arrested...
I thought it was Tim who usually had the references I don't get.
Yeah, this is a new bingo card, man. This is a new year. I've got to move things around. I got to keep things fresh, you know.
Okay. Wild card, bitches.
Yeah, that's right. That's the wild card.
I got that reference.
Yeah, if Steve Prohm gets arrested prior to the game, that probably helps. Maybe make it the whole coaching staff. The whole coaching staff gets arrested prior to the game. Polar Vortex doubles in size. That's
three words.
Yeah. It is supposed to be like 45 degrees on Saturday. So we're talking like 100 degree difference in 2 days.
Yeah. What is it? What is it going to be?
Like 45 degrees on Saturday.
Wow.
So yeah, it's if Texas plays good defense, they could stay in this game. They can make a game of it. It can be close, and then at that point, you know, if Jace can get loose for some open threes, you know, if Ozakowski can take advantage inside, if Hayes can stay out of foul trouble. I mean, there's a lot of ifs. But, you know, there's a reason why Texas is only like a 24% win probability to win this game. And you know, the other, I guess if you're looking for something, look for Iowa State's patented ability to, when they are just about to overtake Kansas in the Big 12 standings, they fuck up a game somewhere for no discernible reason whatsoever, other than they just realize that they're about to pass Kansas and they just can't do it. That's about it. Like, This is, you know, go in with your expectations low, like a Vin Diesel movie. Just know it's just low. Just stay low, and then maybe you're pleasantly surprised. Maybe you get Fast and Furious 7 rather than 2.
I feel like that's a good place to end it off, because that's pretty much the motto of the show, is go in with low expectations, and if you're pleasantly surprised, good.
It's tough to win in Ames when Iowa State is marginal or not good at all. It is really tough to win in Ames when they're good.
That's another good place to end off the show, so we'll do that.
Hang on. I got one more thing.
Yeah.
I don't have one more thing. I'm sorry.
Okay, so there was a Mexican restaurant in Ames called La Fuentes. It was there on Duff Avenue, not far off of the kind of main strip there. The best service, the very best cheese enchiladas. Out of business. Frustrating.
Thank you all for pretending we were football for the past hour. I have been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER, where you'll find many evergreen Longhorn athletic tweets. And I am also joined alongside by Johnny Brashear. Johnny, where can we find you on the internet?
You can find me on Barking Carnival. You can also find me on Twitter at Bitter White Guy, and I'm on Instagram, though it's pretty much just dog photos.
And Johnny, where in the world is Timothy Preston?
1, 2, 3.
So, you know, Tim was really impressed by the outpouring of support for the dead veteran who was buried with no family, even though they found out he actually had family. He's really touched by that. And so for the past week, he has taken his time to go around the country and pay tribute to fallen soldiers across the country, regardless of whether or not they're actually dead. He brings his tombstone. He's got a nice wreath that he refreshes every so often, so the flowers are fresh. And he goes out and you know, he Googles phone numbers and addresses, and he just goes to their front yard and he digs a hole 6 feet deep because he's really committed to making sure that this is accurate and honorable. And he goes in and he puts the tombstone at the end, and he stencils in the name of the soldier who might live in the house or might have recently been deceased. You never know. And he holds a full funeral service at the end at the front yard of that person's residence. It's very touching. It's very authentic. People tend to cry when they're not incredibly angry at what he has just done to their front yard. It's really nice. It's very classy.
So Tim,
watch your back. Hey,
when you're not being a professional stalker in one of the creepiest ways I've ever heard, where can we find you on the internet?
InsideTexas.com and on Twitter, InsideTexasHoop, no S. I don't know. I don't frequent a lot of other sites. I read Johnny's stuff on Barking Carnival. It's there. He writes
it's
stuff.
It's fine.
But I just can't imagine that any other place has the community that we have, Basketball Ways. A lot of really good basketball contributors at our site on InsideTexas.com. InsideTexas.com. Come hang out with us. We're going to have a great time. I just today put something on there about Major League. It's a nice movie reference. It's from the 80s. Has some very famous actors.
But where can we find you on the basketball court?
Well, so earlier today I played at the Y, as you know, and we won our league last session, no big deal. So we moved it to a better session this session. What they found out about me pretty consistently is that I am quite comfortable outside from the perimeter. I am terrific down low with the big boys, but where I excel, where I truly, genuinely excel, is right in your fucking face.
And you guys can find us and our other podcasts on the Hornscast channel. That's the Hornscast channel on Podbean, Spotify, Google Play, iTunes. Wherever you guys can find a podcast, you'll find the Hornscast. On that note, y'all, thank you for listening. We will see y'all next week. Hook 'em.
Hook 'em.
Mark your bingo cards.
Let's go there. Let's make our escape. Go there. Let's ask if we can stay. Can you take me high?